On the last night of the primary campaign, the two presumptive nominees unleashed their first am-not-are-so exchange of the general election. Both parties consider the bottom of the ticket, and Senate races get set in New Jersey and New Mexico. It's time for the latest edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
As we mentioned earlier, Ken Rudin is off today. He's graduating from high school. Well, his son Michael is. Congratulations, Michael. But NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving has graciously agreed to be our guest junkie today. If you have questions about the end of the primaries and the start of the general, about prospective vice presidents, the politics of the Jewish vote, as Senators McCain, Obama, and Clinton all address the AIPAC conference here in Washington, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can also weigh in on our blog, which is at npr.org/blog of the nation. And, well, really, in honor of Ken Rudin, we're going to skip right across that presidential election stuff and start with the United States Senate. A little counterintuitive here. There were a couple of very interesting primaries yesterday in New Jersey on the Democratic side and New Mexico on the Republican side. Why don't we start in New Jersey?
Up in New Jersey, and let me just start by saying, you know, we all miss Ken, and we're disturbed that he would display such a skewed set of priorities as to blow off this show to attend his son's high school graduation. Up in New Jersey, Frank Lautenberg is the senior senator there from New Jersey, although he's had a little interruption between his terms. He's running for re-election this year. He is 84 years old, and he was challenged in the primary yesterday by one of the members of the House delegation there, who is not so subtly sending along the message that perhaps it would be time for the senior senator to move on and for opportunity to be created for one of his younger colleagues. But that was not the view of the Democratic primary voters in New Jersey, who came out pretty strongly for Frank.
Just about 2-1.
Yes. So he will be once again the Democratic nominee in the state of New Jersey. And recently, statewide elections in New Jersey have been quite dominated by the Democratic Party. And I don't think anyone thinks Frank's in any serious trouble this fall. And when he returns, he'll be joining a contingent of senators who are over 75 years old and have served a great number of terms, so he won't be alone in that. He's not even close to being the oldest senator.
No, he'll be facing former Republican Congressman Dick Zimmer in November. On the Republican side in New Mexico, to fill the seat of Republican Pete Domenici, who's retiring due to ill health, and there a moderate Republican, dubbed the successor by Senator Domenici, lost to a more conservative Republican.
Yes, Heather Wilson, who has been a congresswoman for a number of years, had a military career before that, has been a big favorite of moderate Republicans in New Mexico. Pete Domenici, who had a long history in conservative Republican politics, but who is perhaps seen as being moved somewhat to the center in recent years, had endorsed Heather Wilson, had helped sponsor her career to a large degree, but she was challenged by one of the other congressmen, the other Republican congressman from New Mexico, Steve Pierce, who is much more conservative. And they had quite a knockdown drag out throughout the spring. And in the end, Steve Pierce has prevailed. So Heather Wilson's political career will be coming to at least a temporary end.
And he will run off in November against Democrat Tom Udall. Would this make Udall the favorite at this point?
Tom Udall has been running ahead in polls ahead of either of the two Republican candidates, and I think a lot will depend on how Heather Wilson's supporters turn around in November and whether or not they rally to Pierce's banner. If they don't, if they see themselves better represented on the Democratic side, this could be a tough race for the Republicans. And by the way, if Mr. Udall were to be elected, he also has a cousin, Mark Udall, running in Colorado, also as a Democrat, and a third cousin within the same family, Gordon Smith, is already in the Senate as a Republican senator from Oregon, and he's on the ballot this fall as well.
And
so we'll see how many of these cousins all get back here after November.
And many many people, of course, remember Mo Udall very fondly, of course.
Yes, absolutely. The sainted Morris Udall from the state of Arizona, also a member of the same family.
Yeah. As we mentioned, Senators Obama and Clinton spoke this morning at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, the conference being held right down the street from NPR, as a matter of fact. After their speeches, the two ran into each other backstage and back on Capitol Hill. Senator Obama summed up the conversation they had with NPR's David Wellner.
I just spoke to her today, and you know, we're going to be having a conversation in the coming weeks. I'm very confident about how unified the Democratic Party is going to be to win in November. You know, it wasn't a detailed conversation. As I said, I'm very confident about how we're going to be able to bring this party together.
And David Wellner then went on to ask Senator Obama about what it's like to be the first African-American presidential candidate of a major party.
Obviously, it's an enormous honor. It's very humbling. You think about all the people who had to knock down barriers for me to walk through this door. And the challenges they went through were so much more difficult and so much more severe, and the risks they took were so much greater. I've heard from a number of people already that, both black and white, that their kids, 7, 8, 9 years old, take for granted now that, of course, a black can run for president. Of course, a woman can run for president. There's a matter-of-factness to it that I think bodes well for the future.
And that's Senator Obama in a conversation with NPR's David Wellner on Capitol Hill following his speech at the AIPAC conference earlier today. And as he told us, a conversation with Senator Hillary Clinton, who was also in Washington to speak there and to attend to her day job as a senator from the state of New York. And Ron Elving, that reflection there at the end reminds us just what an historic night it was last night.
Reporters go all through their lives asking the same questions over and over of largely the same people. And it's rare that you get to ask a question you've never asked before. But there was a chance for David Wellner running into the senator in the hallway today to say, what does it feel like to be the first African-American nominated for president by a major party? And he could have just as easily been asking that question, to Hillary Clinton as the first woman.
And fascinating either way. Nevertheless, let's get to the politics of what they were doing this morning. Maybe not Senator Clinton so much, but Senator Obama sort of revising his diplomatic plans to speak with Iran.
Yes, and this has been, a policy in evolution right from the first time that it came up during one of the debates, one of the earliest debates between all the Democratic candidates back when they needed a stage almost as large as this riser here in the studio to get all the Democratic candidates for president together back in 2007. That particular debate, the issue was raised of whether or not you should be negotiating with the heads of countries that have been hostile to the United States or have had interests perceived to be at odds with ours, or more particular to this case, at odds with those of Israel. And that would, of course, include organizations that are outside of the regular state structure, such as Hamas or Hezbollah. And for any implication to be raised that an American leader, particularly the American president, might sit down with such people or such leaders without the precondition of their agreeing to change their behavior and specifically their hostile, implacable opposition to the state of Israel, that has been, in the past, pretty much anathema in American politics. If you wanted to run for president, that was a very risky position to take. So when Barack Obama took that position last year, Hillary Clinton pounced on it immediately and said she wouldn't be in that ballpark.
And now Senator McCain has pounced on and pounced and pounced and pounced again last night in his speech in Louisiana.
Yes, and although the view that Obama took that there should be no one in the world that the United States feared to talk to, and of course he makes reference back to Jack Kennedy saying we should never negotiate out of fear, but we should never fear to negotiate. He does make reference to that quite often. And while he has evolved his position, he still basically believes that we should not begin our relationship with anybody in the world, no matter how implacable they may seem, by saying we're not going to talk to you.
Let's see if we get some callers on the line. We're back to our old number, 800-989-8255, and let's talk with Ali. Ali's with us from Chicago.
Hi, good afternoon, Neil. I've got a question for Mr. Ron Elving. It's about, I've been hearing a lot on the talk shows and radio talk shows, especially conservatives. They're really fainting and fawning over the name of Bobby Jindal. I just want to ask Ron Elving if what lawmaking experience or any major accomplishment does this gentleman have for the Republicans to consistently throw out his name out there? It seems like, aren't they being hypocrite? On one side, they criticize Obama, but on the same hand, they want to prop up someone who I haven't literally heard of before he ran for the governorship.
Well, there's one big difference. Nobody ever calls and asks for a question for Mr. Rudin. But anyway, Ron?
Bobby Jindal is a phenomenal young man who is just 36 years old, but who has already run the medical and healthcare system for the state of Louisiana, in fact, parlaying that into becoming the governor of the state of Louisiana. He first got interested in medical care as an issue when he was a staff member here on the Hill and thinking about going to medical school. He blew off the medical school and decided to go into healthcare policy full time. As I say, took over the system in his mid-20s in the state of Louisiana. Later on became the head of the university, LSU, big university, big state university in Louisiana, and still as a very young man went on to run for Congress in his early 30s and then now to be elected governor of Louisiana. As I say, he's exactly 36. It's been observed that when you put him on the very short list of people that John McCain is considering to be his vice president, he would be the first vice presidential nominee to be exactly half the age of the presidential nominee. And that may not be a contrast that they really want. He has not had the kind of legislative accomplishments, let's say, that John McCain has had over a much longer career in Congress. And because during his time in Congress, he has not attached his name to any major legislation, and he's just taken over now as the governor of Louisiana, probably his biggest accomplishment would be the moves that he has made in the direction of eliminating corruption in Louisiana politics. That's supposed to be a laugh line, actually. he's tried to begin the process of cleaning up the ethics of much of the governmental structure in Louisiana, and that is an Augean task that I think will probably occupy him throughout his governorship.
Ali, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with guest political junkie Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get a question from here in the newsroom.
Hi, my name's Jen Doak. I'm from Portland, Connecticut, and I was wondering, given Hillary Clinton's broad popularity amongst female voters across the political spectrum, what do you think the odds are that John McCain's going to consider a female for a vice president, like, for example, Susan Collins of Maine? Thank you.
Well, it's a wonderful question, and I think we've heard John McCain already in the last 48 hours reaching out quite directly to women voters. He has a number of spokespersons, people who are sometimes called surrogates, who are also doing this for him. One is Carly Fiorina, who is the former chief executive of Hewlett-Packard. There are some other women who have had top-level positions in business, the woman who headed up eBay, for example, tremendously successful self-made women who have been campaigning for John McCain. And they're clearly reaching out to women who have identified with Hillary Clinton and her career and suggesting that there's a home for them in the Republican Party and particularly in supporting John McCain. Whether or not he puts a particular woman on his ticket is another question. I've pushed the idea that he would look at all of the different women senators and some of the women in the House of Representatives, some of the women governors in the Republican Party, and one of them that he might turn to would be Kay Bailey Hutchison from Texas, who is, by the way, by far the most popular politician in Texas, even more so than their president, and has been for a number of years. Whether or not she's interested in the job, of course, everyone's always very shy about saying they're interested in the job, and she indicates more of an interest in running for the governorship of Texas. Susan Collins, or for that matter, Olympia Snow, Maine being one of those states that has two women senators. Either one of them might be a candidate, might be a strong candidate for vice president. Generally speaking, particularly if a candidate or a nominee comes from a smaller state like Arizona, John McCain, they're looking for a vice presidential running mate from a larger state who might be able to bring them a larger cache of electoral votes should they win or should they be a team. And we'll see if they're looking, you know, or seriously considering Maine to breed that state.
Thanks very much. Let's go with Chris. Chris calling us from Columbus, Ohio.
Gentlemen, thank you for the time. Ron, I had a question concerning the viability of maybe Hillary being getting the presumptive nod of vice president, what the pros and the cons of that may be, and what you think the outcome may be. I'm not exactly sure what the whisperings are in the Obama campaign right now in terms of a VP slot, but I'd like to get the early feedback for us, please.
Well, this is why we carry these BlackBerries around.
Visual aids for people here in the museum.
Well, and also because it gives us a chance to be able to report the news as it happens. Barack Obama has, pregnant pause, appointed a three-person panel to help him decide who will be the vice president under his or on his ticket. The people who are going to be doing this include Caroline Kennedy, the daughter of John F. Kennedy, and also a guy by the name of Jim Johnson, who has done a lot of the vice presidential vetting for presidential candidates in the past, including John Kerry in 2004, also Walter Mondale back several years ago. And then the third person is Eric Holder, former U.S. attorney here in the District of Columbia. So that's a very high-powered, high-profile team of people who will obviously be reaching out in the direction of many different constituencies in the Democratic Party. You know, we started last night calling Barack Obama the presumptive Democratic nominee, and I guess some people have, wags, have begun to say Hillary Clinton is the presumptuous vice presidential nominee. But this is a special set of circumstances. We have never had, since the primaries and caucuses began to be the means by which we chose the presidential nominees, and that's really just been since 1972, this is the first time we've had a race so close, so very close, that really down to the last days there were scenarios that you could imagine by which either candidate might win. So given that special set of circumstances and, of course, the special circumstances of the first African-American, the first woman to be this close to the Oval Office, there is a special compelling reason to consider Hillary Clinton to be the nominee to be vice president. So this could be that occasion when the dream ticket kind of writes itself, and in the end, it's really beyond the choice of even the two participants on that particular ticket. But then let's not forget, parenthetically, there's a third person in this picture, Bill Clinton.
Thanks very much for the call, Chris. So we'll elaborate on the compelling reasons that she might not be the nominee in the future. Ron Elving, thanks very much for pinch hitting for Ken Rudin.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving with us here at the Newseum. This is Talk of the Nation, and we'll hope that Mr. Rudin is back with us next week, and we'll have him here on a Political Junkie. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.